Hello, friends. Welcome back to Nobody No Problem. I'm Katie.
And I'm Kristen.
And it is Friday night.
And it's fucking snowing like a motherfucker outside.
Yes, winter storm.
For those of you legit fellow Chicagoans, drive safe and all that stuff. Just don't leave. I hope you stocked up on all the alcohol you need to stay warm inside your house.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, food doesn't matter, but alcohol does.
Very important step.
Yep.
To surviving blizzards. Ice storms, blizzards, whatever. It's snow now. It's snowing like crazy.
Snow storm.
Yes.
So my car will be covered when I leave.
Yes, it will be. It will be.
It'll be fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I am excited to hear this banger of a story that we talked about.
Yeah, so what we said is we picked a banger, and it is a banger, because it's my turn. So it's going to be a little bit of a longer episode, but we picked I picked a serial killer, known as the Slave Master, John Edward Robinson.
Dirty.
Yeah, it is dirty. It's real fucking... Ugh. Lots of bad stuff.
I can't wait.
Yeah. So, we are going to get started. His name, obviously, is John Edward Robinson. He was born in the Chicago suburb of Cicero on December 27th in 1943.
Oh, man. You picked a hometown.
I did. Well, a little bit of a hometown. It's in the Midwest.
Close enough.
He was born here, yeah, but Cicero's far. But still, it's in the Midwest.
Listen, everything here is 30 minutes away from each other town, so...
Well, the murdering takes place in Kansas City.
Fine,
so.
But...
but Midwest right, still, fine. Nonetheless. He was born here. Yes.
I digress.
He was the third of five children, born to his parents, Henry and Alberta. Henry, the dad was a binge drinker, but had a good job as a machinist, and his mother was a stay-at-home mom who was a strict disciplinarian, but, like... There really wasn't reports of abuse. Like, he had a really relatively, you know, normal childhood. I don't think there was anything crazy other than the fact that, like, yeah, his dad was an alcoholic, but, like, we know
whose
a lot
dad
of people's...
isn't?
Yeah, ours, but we know a lot of people whose dads are alcoholics, and they're perfectly fine. So at 12 years old, he was encouraged by his father to join the Boy Scouts, PAC 259. By 1957, he was named Eagle Scout. And he was chosen as the sole American representative to lead 120 Boy Scouts at the Royal Command Performance in London in front of Queen Elizabeth II.
That's...
pretty dope.
That's pretty cool.
Right? I was like, you're kind of a dork because you're an Eagle Scout, but still. Like, you got to fucking hang out with the Queen. So
exactly.
That was pretty dope. In high school, he enrolled at Quigley Preparatory Seminary in Chicago, a private boys' school for aspiring priests, but dropped out after 1 year due to disciplinary issues. After that, he enrolled in Morton Junior College in Cicero and to become a medical x-ray technician, but dropped out after 2 years because he sucks. Okay. Not yet, but he still sucks. In 1964, he moved to Kansas City, where he would meet and eventually marry Nancy Jo Lynch. They had three children together, John Jr. and fraternal twins Christopher and Christine. So, after moving to Kansas City, instead of going back to school... he decided he would just forge credentials and a diploma and eventually got a job as an x-ray tech at a medical practice.
Way to go, dude.
These faulty docs. Yeah. Aspiring, you know?
You know what? Whatever works. Fake it till you make it.
Just reach for the stars.
Sounds like Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah, seriously. Shortly after, he began working as an x-ray tech in 1969. He was arrested shortly thereafter after being caught embezzling upwards of $33,000, which is $233,000 today, from his employer. He was sentenced to 3 years probation. So apparently embezzling a fucking quarter of $1 million, you only get 3 years probation. I'd take it. Except he lost all the money, so probably not worth it.
Not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, good efforts.
Right? Good effort. In 1970, Robinson violated probation by moving back to Chicago without his probation officer's permission or knowledge and took a job as an insurance salesman at R.B. Jones Company, whatever the fuck that is. However,
it's an insurance company, it sounds like.
Yeah. Must have been a small one. But in 1971, he was arrested once again for embezzlement from that firm and ordered back to Kansas City where his probation was extended. So he still didn't go to fucking prison. still. Oh, there it is.
White Claw.
White Claw. In 1975, it was extended yet again after another arrest, this time on charges of securities fraud and mail fraud in connection with a phony medical consulting company he had formed in Kansas City.
I'm just going to say something real quick. I see a pattern.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, shit escalates real quick.
Oh, okay. Let's hear it.
Somehow, during this period, however, oh yeah, this is probably the scariest part about him, and that was one of the things that freaked me out the most, is he still managed to maintain the appearance of a personable family man, because his wife and him were still married.
Okay.
He became a scoutmaster, a baseball coach, and a Sunday school teacher.
Someone that I would definitely want as a role model.
Legitimately. I don't know, maybe in the 70s there just like wasn't cell phones and people didn't talk, or they didn't know what was going on, or maybe he moved around, but
I
legit.
I probably say in the 70s they didn't have cell phones.
Oh yeah, well, duh. But they had landlines, fucking phone tree that shit. This guy's a psycho.
Call a friend.
Legit. So in 1977, this shit's even crazier. He even talked his way onto the board of directors of a local charitable organization and forged a series of letters from its executive director to the mayor of Kansas City and from the mayor to other civic leaders. So he forged letters from the mayor and to the mayor, okay, to all these people, commending his generous volunteer efforts and generally singing his praises. Eventually, he had himself named the organization's Man of the Year and threw a festive awards luncheon in his honor.
Can the guy's you, just, like, super full of himself.
Narcissist, like, a fucking, to a T. Like,
you read the book.
Directly out of the book.
What is a narcissist?
This dude's picture is right there.
All
right. Exactly. So, in 1979, Robinson completed probation, but it didn't last long. Because in 1980, he was under arrest again on multiple charges, including embezzlement, check forgery, and check forgery, for which he served 60 days in jail in 1982. Fucking finally.
Okay, but only 60 days.
Only 60 days, yes. Well, once released, you guessed it, he was back at it. And formed, dude, legit. And formed a bogus hydroponics business and swindled a friend out of $25,000 who had hoped to receive a fast investment return to pay for his dying wife's health care.
What a dick.
Yeah, you can tell he's a real nice dude. It's like he's the most important thing in the world, and whatever he needs is beyond everything else. So I know we talked about escalation, but at this point, shit really starts escalating. So shortly after this, Robinson had reportedly begun sexually propositioning many of his neighbors' wives, triggering a fist fight with one of the husbands. And he had fallen deeper into the BDSM culture and joined a secret sadomasochism cult called the International Council of Masters and became its slave master, hence the name, whose duties included luring victims to gatherings to be tortured and raped by cult members.
All right, so I know we said we escalated, but I'm kind of just like, what the fuck? Because we were talking about embezzling money.
Yeah.
And now we're talking about stealing wives.
And BDSM. Bondage. I should know what BDSM means. BDSM means because I've listened to enough shit about it. But it's bondage, discipline,
Sadism,
masochism, and something else. There's like, there's
that covers the four letters.
There's more than four letters. There's six separate things of it.
Clearly, we're not a part of it.
No, so. We are not. Sorry to burst all your bubbles, but we're not into that shit.
Well, I'm not mad about it.
Yes. So as you can tell, it slowly kind of escalated. I mean, I think he got a little bit more ballsy, and he probably fell into, like, the sadomasochism stuff earlier, but this is when they really start talking about where, like, there are significant changes in who he is. So in 1984, having started two more fraudulent shell companies, Equa Plus and Equa 2, Robinson hired Paula Godfrey, 19 years old. Well, she was 19 years old. I don't know why I did that. As a sales representative. Godfrey told friends and family that Robinson was sending her away for training, and this was the last time anyone heard from Paula.
My mind is going to places.
I wonder what happened to her.
I don't.
Yeah, don't. Godfrey's parents filed a missing persons report shortly after, as one would do. The police questioned Robinson, who denied any knowledge of her whereabouts. And several days later, the Godfrey parents received a typewritten letter with Godfrey's signature at the bottom, stating she was thankful for Robinson's help, that she was okay, and that she did not want to see her family. The investigation was terminated, as Godfrey was of legal age, and there was no evidence of wrongdoing. No trace of Paula Godfrey has ever been found.
R.I.P., girl.
Yep.
You dead.
Yep. 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 So, you can... Yeah.
Lock that one up.
Right. And it's like, you know, there's like the escalation where he's like, I can do this. But, yeah. Mm-hmm. In 1985, Robinson, using the name John Osborne, met Lisa Stasi and her four-month-old daughter, Tiffany, at a battered woman's shelter in Kansas City. He promised her a job in Chicago, an apartment, and daycare for her baby, and asked her to sign several sheets of blank stationery.
Well, red flag.
Oh, just wait. You're going to love this. A few days later, Robinson contacted his brother and sister-in-law who had been unable to adopt a baby through traditional channels and informed them that he knew of a baby whose mother had committed suicide. For $5,500 fee, Don and Helen Robinson received Tiffany Stasi, whose identity was confirmed by DNA testing in 2000, and a set of authentic appearing adoption papers with the forged signatures of two lawyers and a judge. Lisa Stasi was never heard from again.
So not only did he murder this girl and take her baby, but he even charged his family members to take the baby that they thought they were adopting.
Yeah.
This is a whole new level of fucked.
Dude, I know. When I was reading through who I was going to pick, it's like a heavy hitter, because I wanted to do someone that I wasn't really aware of, and I kind of knew this guy, but I didn't really know his full story. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And the level of narcissism to have to fucking take the woman who you've murdered and literally
sell the baby
to a to your family member who can easily be linked back to this. Like, it was, I was like, what? That he thinks he's that untouchable. I mean, granted, I am so grateful he didn't harm the baby.
Right.
But
that's not what we're saying, but
legit, the level of narcissism in this is absolutely batshit. I was like, wait, what?
That's wild.
Fucking crazy. And like, his, I feel so bad because his brother and sister-in-law like were like, this is legit, because they had documents that were like,
signed.
He fucking forged all this shit and
that
had
they didn't know was forged but signed,
right? So they were like the legit documents, so they were just as much victims as everyone else. I mean, but yes, you know what I mean. Not,
yes.
Maybe not as much, but still. So in 1987, Catherine Clampett, 27, left her child with her parents in Wichita Falls, Texas, and moved to Kansas to find employment. She was hired by Robinson, who reportedly promised her extensive traveling and a new wardrobe. She vanished in June of that year and was never heard from again. Yep. Shortly after Catherine's disappearance, the genius was arrested yet again. Robinson was incarcerated on multiple fraud convictions from 1987 to 1993. So at least he did, like, that's pretty solid jail time.
Yeah.
So, but he just killed fucking three people and stole a baby. So he probably should stay a little bit longer, but I guess we'll find out.
Well, vacations can only last for so long.
So, at Western Missouri Correctional Facility, he met and became close with 49-year-old Beverly Bonner, the prison librarian. SpaghettiOs? That's just what came to mind.
SpaghettiOs.
Apparently, that's what I was thinking of. A librarian who, upon his release, left her husband and moved to Kansas to work for him. Robinson somehow arranged for Bonner's alimony checks to be forwarded to his Kansas post office box. After this was solidified, her family never heard from Beverly again. For several years, Bonner continued receiving the alimony checks, and each and every check was cashed. I wonder who was cashing them.
Me.
Yeah, just obviously.
I wasn't even alive.
Dick. Okay. So at this point, Robinson escalated yet again when he discovered the fucking internet.
Oh.
Yeah.
Here comes the internet.
Robinson roamed various social networking sites using the name Slave Master, looking for women who enjoyed playing the submissive partner role during BDSM sex, or just BDSM. I don't really... So I know it's not necessary to have sex in all BDSM circles, but a lot of them do.
I will claim that I'm completely ignorant.
I learned a lot about BDSM through all this show. So if anyone has questions, feel free to post them. So the first victim he met online was Sheila Faith. She was 45 and had a 15-year-old daughter named Debbie who was confined to a wheelchair due to spina bifida. He portrayed himself as a wealthy man who would support them, pay for Debbie's therapy, and give Sheila a job. In 1994, they moved from Fullerton, California to Kansas City and immediately disappeared. But the disability checks were still being cashed.
Yep, there it is.
Yeah, there's just one of those things where you. I really wish we had a YouTube channel because Katie's face was just like, what?
Well.
There are no words. There are no fucking words. So Robinson became well-known and increasingly popular in BDS online chat rooms, or BDSM online chat rooms, I apologize. In 1999, he offered Isabella Liswicka. I'm sorry, I'm trying to pronounce it, but it's spelled different than it said because she's Polish. A 21-year-old Polish immigrant living in Indiana, a job, and a bondage relationship. When she moved to Kansas City, the still-married Robinson gave her an engagement ring. Amber, are you okay?
No, I have a question.
Yes.
You said a bondage relationship?
Yes.
What is that?
So, a submissive and a slave person, okay, or whatever. So
just wanted to make sure
So, it's kind of like you're going steady, which is that person in that bondage. But it can go more than that, where, like, you physically sign contracts, kind of like, and I hate saying this because I never read the books and I never got into it, but 50 Shades of Grey, where he is, like, her master and she is the slave, essentially.
Okay.
So
they agreed to that.
They agreed to it,
okay,
yes.
Okay, got it.
So she was into the shit, too. Okay. Which is, I mean, that's normal. So there's, like, a trusting relationship there in normal BDSM circles. It's like, you have to trust your master, and this master has to trust his slave, and it's kind of like that you're comfortable and you trust each other,
okay,
and that aspect of things. So it's not all craziness, but it is, I mean, I'm just not into it.
That's fine. We're not all into it. That's but that doesn't mean that that makes it bad.
Right,
if it
do
works
you,
for
boo-boo.
Some people.
Whatever, as long as you're not fucking killing people.
Like you said, do you, boo-boo.
Do you, boo-boo. When she moved to Kansas City, the still-married Robinson gave her an engagement ring and brought her to the county registrar, where they paid for a marriage license that was never picked up. Robinson had Liswicka sign a 115-item slave contract that gave Robinson almost total control of every other aspect of her life, including her bank accounts. During the summer of 1999, she disappeared. Robinson told the web designer he employed that she had been caught smoking marijuana and deported. So that's kind of like the escalation where, like, people can do that, but if it gets to the point where he's talking about your bank fucking accounts and shit, there's something wrong.
Call
that's
your
a huge
dad.
Red flag. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Call your dad. About the time Liswicka disappeared, Robinson convinced a lonely, licensed practical nurse by day and submissive slave by night named Suzette Torton to move from Michigan to Kansas so they could travel the world together. Torton's mother received several typed letters purportedly mailed while the couple was abroad. Although the envelopes were stamped with Kansas City postmarks and the letters were, as her mother said, uncharacteristically mistake-free, because I guess Torton was not good at grammar. Later, Robinson.
If I ever had a completely correct grammatical letter from you, I would know that you were kidnapped.
I mean, I'm not that bad, but I
you're
just don't.
You're bad enough that if
no,
it was 100%.
No, I'm good at, like, when it counts, like, but I just don't fucking give a shit about text messages or Facebook.
Dude, you sent me the letter that you were sending to the owners of the house when you wanted to buy it.
Yeah.
I love you.
No, you just edited a bunch of words.
No.
It was not bad. She's being way worse than what it is.
I wish you guys could see my face.
Way worse than what it was. I'm not bad at grammar. I fucking took dictation and all that shit from other people. I had to, like, proofread letters
listen,
and stuff.
Sometimes insert a period.
I always, listen, This is all not good because I just wrote it down. But I digress. We're not going to talk about my grammar skills anymore.
Okay.
So, uncharacteristically mistake-free later, Robinson told Thornton's mother she had run off with an acquaintance after stealing money from him.
Sounds like bullshit.
Smells like a big heaping pile of bullshit. So, as time moved on, and like many other serial killers, Robinson became increasingly careless and did a progressively poorer job covering his tracks. And by this point, his name was involved in multiple missing persons cases. Because obviously, so he had like up to 17 aliases, they said. And a lot of them, it was like, hey, my name's John fucking... He would always use his first name too, which makes no fucking sense. My name's John Murphy. Come meet me at this hotel.
And it was like... John's a common name, so I get it to make it...
But it's your actual name.
Right.
Like, fucking call yourself Mike. But so he... Eventually, they with the missing people, they, like, his name kept popping up. Over, I mean, at this point, it's been a 20 years-ish, so it's like his name has kept popping up.
I mean,
so yeah, it just keeps coming up. Yeah, and obviously he has a rap sheet. So his name was involved in multiple missing persons investigations. So detectives, by 1999, detectives actually began tailing him and witnessed him meeting up with many different women at hotels and different homes. He would frequent strip clubs in shady areas where prostitution was rampant until his wife would come home at 5, and then he would turn home and play the husband and father. Who he's still married to, his original wife. They're not divorced. He's still living with his kids. They've been married for like 30 fucking years now. I don't know how she didn't know something was going on, but who knows?
I mean...
People said that he was like he'd like mow your lawn. He would, like, talk to you and invite you to barbecues and shit when he was at home.
Clearly, he's very good at lying and...
What do we call him? He's a chameleon.
Yes.
Narcissists know how to do that really well, though. They know how to play people and manipulate.
Correct.
So the investigators continued to compile more evidence against Robinson and became more and more suspicious, and eventually police got a break. One of Robinson's slaves, a woman named Brenda, there was no last name given and I couldn't find one, had come into the police station to file a report against Robinson. She began meeting him at motels, and one of the times things got way out of hand, and he had sexually assaulted her, and she filed charges against him. So I guess it was, like, bad. Like, he kind of beat her and raped her, and it was still BDSM. Like, that's what they were going for, but, like, once you say your safe word, you're done. And I guess he got super mad at something, and, yeah. So she definitely... Way past the safe word. And days later, another woman, whose name was never given, comes forward with the same accusation, except this time the charge included robbery as well. So he beat her, raped her, and then took all of her shit.
Well, that sounds on point with his earlier activities with the police.
Yeah. And I honestly, like, at this point, he's just not... He's like, it doesn't matter, I'm going to get away with everything anyway. But I don't know how you can think that. So he's just, like we said a million times, he's just super, like, I'm the smartest man alive.
Narcissist.
Right. He's a narcissist. Textbook. With all of this information and evidence, the police finally have enough to procure a search warrant and make an arrest. And here we go. On 10:15 a.m. on Friday, June 2nd, 2000, at number 36 Monterey Lane, Santa Barbara Estates, Kansas, two police officers knocked on the door of John Robinson and told him he was under arrest. He would later be charged with aggravated sexual battery and robbery of the two women, and he was now the main suspect, and he would need to answer some questions regarding the disappearance of Lisa and Tiffany Stacy, Paula Godfrey, Catherine Clampett, and Susan Troughton. Police wasted no time and got to work, and they arrested Robinson. They confiscated his computer and paper files he kept dating back years.
Idiot.
Yeah, dumbass. They are also able to get search warrants for his storage lockers that Robinson owned in Olathe, Kansas, Raymore, Missouri, along with a farm in Linn County, which was also in Missouri. The Olathe storage locker. Investigators found a fucking treasure trove of evidence that included birth certificates, social security cards, and driver's license belonging to several of the missing victims. Fucking idiot. But, as narcissists go, they love to keep trophies.
Yep.
Love to keep trophies
for days.
Mm-hmm. The next day, the investigators began the search of the Lynn family farm with their search and rescue canine motherfucking unit. They found two 88-gallon metal barrels. What do you think's in there?
Bodies.
Bodies.
Oh, no.
So this is where shit gets real fucking weird, though. So police opened the first barrel to find naked, blindfolded, and decomposing body of Suzette Torton. She was face down in the fetal position.
R.I.P.
Upon opening the second barrel, police find a second decomposing body of a woman who matches none of the descriptions of the missing women they were questioning Robinson about. Investigators now had another murder case to open.
Jesus Christ.
Yep. Oh, and it gets better. Across the state line in Missouri, on Monday, June 5th, the task force opened storage locker number E2, finding inside three 88-gallon barrels. What do you think's in there?
Trophies.
They were actually labeled pig lard or pig fat. What or lard, or one of the things.
Dick.
Yep, that's what they were labeled. When the barrels were opened, they did not find pig fat. The investigators found the decaying bodies of Beverly Bonner, Sheila Faith, and her daughter, Debbie Faith, who, may I remind you, had spina fucking bifida and was fucking in a wheelchair. She was 15.
Ugh, God.
Yeah. So, not that it takes away from the other women, but
no,
she was in a fucking wheelchair. She was literally disabled.
That's just awful.
Yeah.
Well, the whole thing's awful.
Well, it is. But that's just like, it's another level. That is another fucking level. Another level. So on June 12th, a pathologist identified the woman found in the second barrel as Isabel Lithwiska. So his Polish friend who he signed the contract with.
Oh.
Yep. Who had been one of Robinson's submissives or slaves. She had actually never been reported missing, which shocked her family as they thought she was traveling in Europe, as they had received multiple letters and postcards from her. So she was never actually reported missing. So they weren't even looking for her.
Well, I'm glad they found her.
Of course.
But.
Yes.
You'd be like, what the fuck? I thought you were living your life large in Europe.
It's also very scary because he did it so well that. Well, it turns out that Sheila and Debbie Faith, as well as Beverly Bonner, didn't have missing persons reports filed either. So they were not even fucking looking for these people.
Where are your parents?
Dude, I don't. Or your family. But so it would appear, as we all fucking know, that Robinson seduced Bonner for her $1,000 a month alimony checks from her ex-husband. So he had killed Bonner to take her alimony checks for himself. It shocked the Bonner family as well, as she was writing letters and cashing checks so no one knew she was missing. So that's basically, like, he was able to manipulate her enough to get her alimony checks sent to his P.O. box.
That's insane.
Yeah. Fucking insane. I don't know how or why ever you would ever do that. Don't fucking do that. Same with Sheila and Debbie Faith. Sheila's daughter, Debbie, was disabled. As I fucking said, she was in a wheelchair due to spina bifida and would get monthly disability checks. Robinson killed them both and was cashing the monthly disability checks. Their family was also shocked as they were writing letters and cashing checks monthly.
Dickhead.
Dick.
Dick. I don't even have anything else to say right now. Like, I...
Yeah, and at this point, they notified Tiffany Stacy, who was now known as Heather Robinson, that she was 16, that her fucking mother was murdered by her uncle, adoptive uncle, I guess, but uncle nonetheless, and she was sold to her parents.
Okay, so we're moving on from, let me just recap. So now they've found all the bodies, and now they tell the girl that was
Lisa Stacy's
essentially
baby.
Illegally
yes.
Adopted.
Uh-huh. Well, kidnapped and then given away.
Correct.
For money.
Right.
Yes.
That. So what happens then?
So she is 16, and I can't remember their names, but her family is all that she knows. And they were good people.
Yeah.
She loved her parents.
Right.
She had a great life.
It was
so,
him that was the asshole.
Yeah. So she stayed with them. She was like, I don't want to. And they were like, it doesn't matter. We want to keep
sucks,
her.
But this is, I'm comfortable, I'm happy, essentially. I'm staying here.
And I mean, they were good people. They were just as upset and shocked as...
At least that's a good outcome?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. There was actually, she actually ended up suing a, what do they call those people? Social worker in Kansas, because she found out through the grapevine that she knew that John had done something to her mom and that she was illegally adopted.
What happened with that?
They settled out of court.
Okay.
And she ended up splitting it with one of her paternal grandparents and her family. So, okay. I mean, I can't tell you, there wasn't a lot of information on her now. Because
she probably doesn't want to be in any kind of spotlight.
Right, exactly. She's like not, she didn't write a book, she didn't do anything like that. I don't know if she's on drugs, I hope you're not. I don't know if she's got her own family, I don't know. But that's basically the information they have on her. And they were able to prove this through a DNA test, so they know that it's her.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so, so he sucks balls. According to the autopsy reports, all five women died from blunt force trauma, and most likely from a ball ping hammer. So the little one, there's like a ball on the thing, and then the back of it's flat.
Oh.
It's like a little ball of metal.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yep. So that was the coroner's best guess. I guess it fits.
Literally
fits. Yeah. Legit. So, that happened. He sucks. Moving on. On June 13th, John Robinson was charged with 5 counts of first-degree murder for the bodies found in Kansas and Missouri. The death penalty would be sought by both states. Cheers to that shit. But it does get confusing because it's across state lines. So he murdered in Missouri and Kansas. So in Johnson County, the Johnson County District Court in Kansas, Robinson was formally charged with 2 counts of murders for the death of Suzanne Torton and Isabella Lithwicka, in addition to the kidnapping and aggravated assault of Suzette Torton. So that was just another. So in Cass County, which was Missouri, he was charged with the murders of Beverly Bonner, Sheila, and Debbie Faith, because they were found in Missouri and the other two were found in Kansas.
Right.
In 2002, Robinson was sentenced to death in Kansas for the murders of Torton and Lithwicka and life imprisonment for killing Stacy. Stacy. The only reason that was because she had been murdered before Kansas reinstated the death penalty. So he would have got death for her, but it wasn't on the table.
Got it.
So, fingers crossed, Robinson could become the first convict executed by lethal injection in the state of Kansas.
Let's fucking go!
Fingers and toes! Robinson simultaneously faced a complex legal dilemma in Missouri, where prosecutors actively pursuing additional murder charges based on the evidence discovered in that state. Robinson's attorney opposed his extradition to Missouri because Missouri is a far more aggressive state in capital punishment than Kansas, which has yet to execute anyone since reinstating the death penalty statute.
So they reinstated it, and they're like, maybe we're not going
to
use
it. Yeah, fucking Kansas. Get it together, dude. This guy does not need to be alive anymore.
Well, even besides him, I'm sure there's others that could just go. I mean, we're clearly having an overpopulation problem.
Legit. But they're going to release the people who raped women instead of bought weed from a corner. But I guess not. Well, maybe in Kansas. It's still not legal in Kansas, right? It is in Illinois now. So, however, Chris Koster, the Missouri prosecutor, insisted as a condition of any plea bargain that Robinson lead authorities to the body of Lisa Stacy, Paula Godfrey, and Catherine Clampett. Since, and I hate this man, doing that would have constituted a tax... I can't even. It would literally just be an admission of guilt, which could have been used against him in Kansas, so Robinson refused.
Tell me they never found their bodies.
They never found their bodies.
Fuck you.
Fuck you, douche. So, Koster, on the other hand, faced pressure to make a deal, obviously, because his case was not technically airtight. Among other issues, there was no unequivocal evidence that any of the murders had actually been committed within Koster's jurisdiction. They just found the bodies. So, When it became clear that the woman's remains would never be found without Robinson's cooperation, a compromise of sorts was reached. In a carefully scripted plea in October of 2003, Robinson acknowledged only that Koster had enough evidence to convict him of capital murder for the deaths of Godfrey, Clampett, Bonner, and the Faiths. Though his statement was technically a guilty plea and was accepted as much as such by the Missouri court, it was notably devoid of any contrition or specific acceptance of responsibility.
Fuck you. Again. Mm-hmm. Just all the fucks.
All the fucks, dude. Legit.
What a piece of shit.
What a piece of human garbage.
But, like, now you're making it even more so of me hating you.
Yep. Because, honestly, you're in fucking prison for the rest of your life. Just fucking show them where the bodies are. What are you? You're never getting out, bro. You are never fucking going to see the light of day again.
You did it.
We all know you did it. But he, that's that narcissism. He just wants to play God once again because he knows something you'll never know. And as we said, no, for real though. It's so I just will never understand. So the remains of Lisa Stasi, Paula Godfrey, and Catherine Clampett are still unknown. Robinson currently remains on death row in motherfucking Kansas. And like I said, Kansas, get your shit together.
Put him down.
Put this motherfucker down. Oh, and I also...
like a rabid dog.
Dude, for real, in 2005, Nancy filed for divorce after 41 years of marriage, citing incompatibility and irreconcilable differences. I had to include that because she fucking stayed married to him through all of his trials after she found out that he was obsessed with BDSM, cheated on her, murdered 5 women, and they know he's murdered more, but they can't prove it. At least 5. And she fucking said citing incompatibility and irreconcilable fucking, I can't even talk, differences. Irreconcilable. I'm having a stroke.
Irreconcilable.
Sure. Differences. The fuck? How? Why?
You know what?
Why?
Because that probably is the simplest thing, and any judge that reads that divorce plea of like, can I get out of this marriage? He'd be like, yes, you can.
Yeah, you know what? You really can.
You could say something like, I like whales, and he doesn't, and then read all the details. Like, you can call it that.
Legit.
And then read the details and be like, ma'am, run for your fucking life.
Yeah, get the fuck out of that place. He, the funny thing was, this is what it was, like, in record, like, public record as, and... she didn't even bring up, like, adultery or the fact that he was cheating on me multiple times a day with multiple different women.
Well, here's the thing, though, of a classy person.
Jesus.
If you know doing 1 and 2 will do the job, why go through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
Well, yeah, but I feel like...
don't even bother.
No, I feel like the first thing I would say would be adultery. Not, like, irreconcilable, I did it, differences. You know what I mean?
Yes, you did. But that can cover so many things.
Yeah,
like if you didn't
it's pretty
read,
broad.
If you didn't read through the complaint for the divorce, that could cover so many things. So she might have put in there, like,
He's super into BDSM now.
Yes. Or, like, he's been convicted of 5 murders. That could be included in there.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Because it is a very broad statement.
I cannot get over this. And the judge would be like, who the fuck could?
Seriously. That's fucking legit. But I thought this story was absolutely fucking batshit. And I think the thing that killed me was the adoption thing. It's like, it takes a specific type of person to take anybody's life for your own selfish purpose, but to legitimately not even... and then charge your family a fee.
I don't have words.
I was like,
I don't.
What? This can't be fucking real. How?
It seems to be real, and it seems to be fucked.
Dude.
I, like, that kind of person, I'm glad to know that I can confidently say that I don't have anyone like that in my life, because that's years and years and years of therapy coming at you hot.
Dude, it's... I... There are just, like, so many things that are going on in my brain that I want to say, but I can't because I just don't know how to put them, like, articulate them into sentences.
Into words.
It's just something I'll never understand. But, again, it all goes back to us thinking, being crazy and, like, trying to understand what is going on in this person's fucking mind. I mean, other than money and the fact that he just doesn't give a fuck.
He's just a narcissist.
Yeah.
There is nothing other than that.
Oh, yeah. He was so into himself. They said when they...
childhood, he...
Yeah, I mean, his childhood was... I tried to, like... I researched a little bit more, but there really was... His dad was definitely a binge drinker and drank a lot, but it's not like he was a bad drunk. He wasn't an alcoholic, but...
abuse them.
There was no abuse. There was no, like, molestation. There was no... His siblings... were completely normal. Not, there was not a single other arrest in his family's, like, history. It was just him. And I just don't, like, where he came from, it just doesn't make sense for the person that he turned out to be. But I think, you know, you can kind of see it coming as he got older.
I do believe that sometimes there's just bad seeds.
I do, too. And he was just a bad
seed.
There's
no explanation.
Yeah.
He was just not a good person.
Yeah. I mean, they said that when the investigator, I watched a couple of videos, which I will cite my sources, but I watched a couple of videos on YouTube, just like, you know, little like 20 minute synopsis of like what happened. And every investigator was like, he was a cocky bastard. When we came in and said that he was getting arrested for these two, he was snarky and kind of laughed. It was just like, yeah, whatever. And then when they said, we're going to, but we also have some questions about, you know, Lisa Stasi and Tiffany and Paula Godfrey and all these missing women, they said, like, he kind of lost it and was just like, how do you even know about that? Like, I'm smarter than you. Why would you ever even know? Why would you figure it out? And then they said once he went out, they got him outside because it was like a big thing. It was in a small town in Kansas that he immediately flipped on a switch and was like snarky and head held high and was very like, just, I'm the best. I'm going to get out of this. You guys will never catch me on any of this stuff. Full well knowing he had fucking the barrels of these women's filled with their fucking decaying remains on his property.
That's fucking insane.
Yeah, dude. It was crazy to listen to, like, stories about what they perceived him to be. But he still is that way. And I try to find interviews with him to, like, get a feel for what he sounds like and kind of see his demeanor, but they don't have any. There really wasn't much. Which is crazy, because this guy's fucking... He definitely killed more than 5 people, but... fucking crazy.
Yeah.
It was just dumb luck that they stumbled upon all the other bodies for people they weren't looking for.
That's insane.
Yeah. Crazy. It was a crazy story. But he was a dick, and he is on death row, so serves him fucking right, dude.
Sure does.
Yeah. He should just, you know, stay there forever, and they should just kill him already.
I mean, I'm for it.
Yes. So I will cite my sources. I did a lot on Murderpedia, a lot on Wikipedia, and I watched a video. It was like a snippet from an old 90s TV show called, or like early 2000s TV show called like FBI Case Files or something on YouTube. But yeah, I watched a few of those. So yeah, there really wasn't much on him surprising, but I mean there is, but it's a lot of the same story, so it was hard to dig and get like
good information.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Alright, that is surprising, considering how many people he's killed.
Yeah, I'm surprised that I tried to look for a podcast, too, and I couldn't find one.
Hmm.
Yeah, but this is it. This is my perception. I hope it wasn't too much, but you know.
Sure.
Dick.
At the end of the day, consensus is dick.
Consensus is dick. We voted.
Alright, well, I'm going to vote on a joke.
Yay! Katie's corner.
Sure. Still don't like the song, but we're going to go along with it. I'm going to tell one that's been in my phone for a while.
I'm excited.
All right. What do you tell Simba if he's walking slow?
I don't know.
Mufasa.
This is great because Lion King's our favorite movie. But
I love
Lion King. I don't think I've heard that one. That was great.
So Mufasa.
Mufasa.
But I did stack up on jokes today because I was like, shit, I'm running low.
I love that.
And I just went crazy and filled my phone up with jokes.
Now you got jokes on the back burner?
Yep.
Stacks on stacks on stacks? Making it rain? Jokes?
Exactly.
I couldn't think of anything else.
I got a bunch of New Balance shoes flying at you through the speakers. For all my dad jokes.
For all. New Balance dad shoes. Coming at you hot. Right. Okay, what else do we have to say? Like, subscribe, review. Do those reviews. We have 11 now on iTunes, so keep them coming. And even if they're bad, we still want them. But don't make them bad, because we're sensitive and we will find you.
Listen, one of us is sensitive. You can put the bad shit out there. I will take it. And
you're allowed your opinion. I don't care. Yeah. Follow us on Insta. Nobody.noproblem. Give us a like on Facebook. Same thing. Nobody, no problem. Any other news we have to talk about?
No, I'm just going to try to shovel my car out of the snow.
Oh, yeah, dude. If you're out in the streets right now, be careful. And like we said, stock up on all the Jack Daniels, which apparently everyone did because Jewel was sold out of it.
Yes.
I missed the memo.
I went to Jewel and they were all gone.
They all drank my Jack. This is bullshit. So I had to stick to Pinnacle Vodka.
But it's okay. Be grateful. Be grateful.
Thanks, Dan. My candy cane and double shot Pinnacle Vodkas.
Whatever. Whatever works. Whatever does the job.
It does the job, man. It is vodka.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. I'm Katie.
I am Kristen, and we are a Nobody No Problem. Signing out. We'll catch y'all on the flip side.
Yep. Bye.
Goodbye.